You know, I've got a list of stuff here to talk to you about. If I don't get busy, we're never going to get it all in, okay?
Sounds good.
You know, you and Terry Bryant working on reopening TAMS. How realistic is that, Patrick?
Well, the first step is this task force, which we hope will bring some information together and be able to persuade those who have stood against it that this is the right thing to do for our region and our state. We're looking at the minimum security portion of TAMS as the part that's going to potentially reopen. We believe that will alleviate some pressures on the Department of Corrections and also bring jobs back to our area.
You know, that is a big one because you've got the mold issue down there, and that repurposing is such an important component. But there's also, you know, when you look at all the talk about taxation and things along that line, I mean, closing it was dictated as a necessity financially. I mean, it's kind of confusing on what to go for right now when it comes to funding, while at the same time going, gee whiz, you can't tax us to death.
No, that's right. We, of course, are facing that every day in the General Assembly, some new taxes thought up, proposed, or put forward. But this would be a little different. It would operate, we believe, of course, the task force would tell us more, but potentially under the current DOC budget, which would potentially not require any more funds. But that, of course, again, something the task force will have to flesh out for us. And just so we're clear, we're not talking about opening the maximum security portion. It's just the minimum security that was attached with it that would potentially reopen after the task force meets.
Tell me more about your blue-collar jobs bill.
Well, that's an initiative to work throughout the state, but particularly in rural areas, to allow tax credits for companies who essentially bring blue-collar jobs to our state. It requires new employment. It requires that these be jobs that do not require necessarily a college degree, but those that could be filled by those who have a technical training or an associate's degree. And then if the companies increase their employment, they would be eligible for certain tax credits with the state. There are different programs. The EDGE program is one that's currently operating and would be expanded through this effort. We hope that if we are successful with getting this bill put forward and eventually passed, that it will help areas of our state that are really depressed and are hurting economically, of course, Southern Illinois being one of the prime examples of that. We have not seen much movement on it yet. There are a lot of Republicans who've signed on. We're hoping that we can push that forward here in the coming weeks.
How hard is it for you to push this kind of legislation? And knowing that you're behind the proverbial financial eight ball, as you highlighted in a recent press conference, when you were talking about the 38.5% higher tax burden that Illinois taxpayers are under?
Well, you know, it's been put forward that kind of, I view, a false choice. The choice has been put to the General Assembly is either raise taxes or you've got to cut spending to a draconian level. Really, there is a middle ground that involves growing Illinois' economy, and that's going to involve tax cuts. There's also involved spending cuts. But if we have the right tax cuts that causes business development to grow, cause our economy to grow, that will actually bring in more tax revenue, and it will allow our region and the rest of Illinois to thrive.
All right. Now, you're working on another piece of legislation to strengthen order of protection. And I'll tell you, orders of protection, this is interesting because I have had over the years a number of different conversations with people, women primarily, who feel these orders of protection did little or nothing to help them, that law enforcement never helped them the way that they felt they should have been helped. It's interesting because I hear different stories based on different towns, and that ultimately it's only a piece of paper and it won't stop it. But your idea is to do more to support these people.
Yes, I introduced two pieces of legislation that are now passed the House and are moving on to the Senate that will protect victims. One deals with orders of protection. The other deals with those who are victims of a crime. The first, with relation to the order of protection, it's just a way for the circuit clerks to keep this information confidential until the subject of the order or the respondent is served with the order. So what could happen now is a person files an order of protection, and then it's immediately put on a public website. where a person, if they were looking for it, could find out that they have been the subject of an order of protection before they're served. Well, the order is not valid until it's served on the subject of it. So this person, the subject of it, may avoid service, may actually harass the person who is, or worse, who's filed the order of protection. And so this is a way to keep it confidential until the person served by law enforcement and then the order is in full effect. Again, this is just one step. It's important, and most law enforcement officers I've worked with are very good about seeing that these orders are enforced, are served first and then enforced, and that then if someone violates it, they're held to account for their violation and brought to court and ultimately punished for that violation.
All right.
The other, go ahead.
Go, no, you go ahead. I don't want to interrupt you.
That's right. The other part is kind of fills a loophole in the law. Right now, a judge can order no contact as a condition of a criminal case, but that only applies when the person is posted bond. This new provision would allow the judge to put the no contact order as part of a criminal case in while the person's in jail. And then the court could enforce that through various measures. But it just kind of fills in a gap that existed in the law.
This is kind of an awkward question here, and I'm not sure how I'm going to get through it, but you take a look at you and Terry Bryant's effort to reopen TAMS. You take a look at the blue-collar jobs bill. You take a look at this legislation to strengthen the order of protection. And then you've got legislation when it comes to abortions in the state of Illinois. And tag that on the end because if you got an opportunity to talk about that. In the past, right, there was a little more equilibrium between the two parties. You've got to have support from Democrats to get legislation done. What have you seen when it comes to your legislation, your freshman year, and support from the Democratic Party, other members of the House?
Well, of course, some of the legislation I put forward has not received support from the Democratic Party, but some has, like the two bills I mentioned and the TAMS task force that we talked about earlier. It requires us, Terry, Dave Severn, and I, to work with members on the other side to persuade them of what we're proposing and ultimately get them to agree that this is the right step. For instance, the no contact order that I mentioned, one of the bills, I had two chief co-sponsors who were Democrats. So that helped me push that legislation forward. The same thing is true with the TAMS task force. That was pitched as a way to help not only the Department of Corrections, but also help an economically underserved area. So we were able to get help from members in the Democratic Party, get that called in committee and get it out of committee and onto the House floor and eventually passed. Now, there's going to be some piece of legislation where we're not going to find that agreement or cooperation. Abortion is a chief example of that. We have just two divergent views in the two parties about what's acceptable and what should be legal and not legal. And, of course, the Democratic Party is going way to the extreme. They're wanting abortion up to the last month of pregnancy. They're wanting to eliminate parental notification, which are things the Republican Party is fighting against. We're standing against it every day, and we've so far been successful in holding those off even from being voted on in committee. So where we can find agreement, we try to find agreement and work together. There's other pieces of legislation. We just can't find that agreement. And unfortunately, we are in the super minority, meaning we're really, really down. So we have to fight that much harder to make sure those pieces of legislation don't get to the House floor, and if they do, we can see that they're defeated.
All right, as Illinois State Representative and former state's attorney, just a point-blank question. Are FOID cards constitutional?
Well, there was a judge in White County who said that they are not constitutional, and the more I look at it, the more I tend to agree with his position, the judge's position. That case is, of course, I've only read news reports, not the case, so the facts I have are from the news. Someone had a FOID card violation, which was in their house. They weren't out in public with the firearm. They were just in their house, didn't have a FOID card, and were facing prosecution. The judge found that to be unconstitutional under the Second Amendment, and now it'll go to the Supreme Court, and they will have a chance to make a decision. It's anyone's guess how the Supreme Court's going to turn out on that case, but it's clear that some of the items we placed in law are infringing on our Second Amendment rights, and then, of course, there are other pieces of legislation being put forward that go even farther. I believe that the Supreme Court will take a hard look at this, And I'm hopeful that they will find that it's unconstitutional, especially if it's applied to people in their own homes and that are not committing any crimes.
But here's the thing. In the Illinois Constitution, gun ownership is subject to police powers. It's a different constitution for the state of Illinois.
That's true. But the federal constitution would trump the state constitution. The states cannot provide any less rights than the federal government does. They can provide more rights than the federal government, but they cannot provide any fewer rights. So if our state constitution were viewed to provide less rights to an individual, then the federal constitution would trump that.
We are running out of time, but before we go, you have had a long, decades-long relationship with the Illinois State Police. You know, in your old district, 57 rolling through the highways there, a lot of state police down your district. And here's the thing. Saturday morning, I'm like, this can't be. I'm reading, there's another one. I kept thinking, you know, on social media that somehow there's an echo, and three police officers in one quarter.
It's really scary. It's horrifying to think of what's going on, especially on our roadways. You know, I don't know if you're aware, Tom, but today is actually Illinois State Trooper Day.
Didn't know that.
April 1st every year is Illinois State Trooper Day. And I would just encourage everyone, all your listeners, everyone, to make sure when they're on the roadways to abide by Scott's Law, which means if they see a vehicle on the side of the road with flashing lights or hazards or, of course, emergency vehicles with flashing lights, they need to slow down and get over. And that's something all of us need to abide by. That would have prevented the tragedy in with the trooper from Freeport, Jones Story, that was killed. And then we all have to be careful when we're driving to make sure that we're paying attention, not on our cell phones or other devices, that we're aware of what's going on, maintaining an appropriate speed. And, you know, the men and women of the Illinois State Police are there to protect us. They do an excellent job of protecting us and serving us as citizens, and we need to do our part as citizens to make sure we're driving safely and aware of situations that place them in danger.
Illinois State Representative Patrick Windhorst. Patrick, can you hold tight?
Yes.
Hey, just real quick, only got about 20 seconds. What's coming up this week that we should be looking out for?
Well, today, actually, or this evening, I have a town hall meeting in Hamilton County at the high school at 6 o'clock. It's going to be Dale Fowler, Dave Severn, and myself, and we're going to talk about the Second Amendment, the governor's budget, and economic development in our region. So I'd encourage anyone to come out that would want to at the 6 o'clock at the Hamilton County High School. And then after that, I'll be going into session for the rest of the week.